Leaders at the G7 summit in Japan are holding a special session on the war in Ukraine. President Volodymyr Zelensky has joined the talks in the city of Hiroshima. He's already met with a number of leaders on the sidelines of the summit. G7 leaders have agreed to tighten economic sanctions on Moscow, while the US has backed the training of Ukrainian pilots on F-16 fighter jets. Let's go live now to Hiroshima. Our diplomatic editor, James Bayes, is there. So, James, the G7, I think it's safe to say, has been dominated by the visit of President Zelensky. What does that mean for him and for G7 unity against Russia and its war in Ukraine?
Yeah, absolutely. A meeting taking place now. We've had the meeting between the G7 and President Zelensky. Now the wider grouping, Prime Minister Kishida, is calling that meeting to order. I warn you, we're not going to get pictures of this for much longer because we're told we'll see the very start of the meeting and then they go into closed session. But we are seeing the pictures of the meeting now and the wider grouping here, those that have been invited by the G7, very important for President Zelensky because they include countries that are not in the Western coalition. Yes, Australia is one of the invited countries, but most importantly, countries like Brazil, India and Indonesia also in the grouping of people attending. We have South Korea, Vietnam, the Cook Islands and Comoros. You might wonder about those two, but one is the current chair of the African Union and the other is the chair of the Pacific Island States. For President Zelensky, he's trying to persuade all of these countries to do more for Ukraine. Some countries like India, I think, some observers would say have been somewhat on the fence. For example, India abstained in the UN General Assembly on votes that had taken place last year on the war in Ukraine. President Zelensky is hoping his personal diplomacy here face-to-face, and he's been sat next to Prime Minister Modi, as you can see in the pictures, his personal diplomacy, and he had a meeting a few hours ago with Prime Minister Modi, can perhaps change things a little and get some of these countries more firmly on Ukraine's side. Of course, with regard to India, India has very long-standing defence ties with Russia, which obviously is a significant factor in the Indian calculations on the situation regarding Ukraine. For President Zelensky, there is some worrying news back home from Bakhmut, as I think these pictures are about to draw to an end, the live pictures that we see. But there is some good news on what he's getting on the ground. Certainly from the G7 partners and particularly the US, the objection on F-16s being transferred to Ukraine seems to have been lifted by President Biden, meaning that other NATO nations, not the US, they're not going to supply the F-16s, but other NATO nations that have F-16s can now transfer them to Ukraine, giving Ukraine the latest ask it's wanted, which is fighter jets, something that the president of Ukraine has been asking for some months. And we've seen this progression over 15 months. We've seen initially some of even the NATO members saying they weren't going to supply any sort of lethal aid. It had to be non-lethal aid. Then we saw more sophisticated weaponry. We saw missiles. We saw air defense systems. Then the subject area was tanks. Now it's fighter jets. So certainly, if you look at what has happened over the last 15 months, Ukraine is getting so much more for its defence than it did at the start of this war. And that, in part, must be due to President Zelensky and his tireless diplomacy, using the phone, using Zoom calls, video links to begin with, and now he's felt that his country perhaps is not as at the risk of imminent falling to the Russians as it was at the beginning. He's able to travel. He feels it's safe enough to travel. And we're now seeing repeated shuttle diplomacy, jet diplomacy by President Zelensky. This the first time he's visited Japan. This is the first time an in-person meeting of the G7. And pretty significant to see the pictures of him with the G7 leaders. Those pictures, I'm sure, will rankle in Moscow because, of course, the G7, until a decade ago, and just a few weeks, actually, it will be a decade ago in June 2013 was the last meeting of the G8, and that G8 used to have Russia as part of it, and President Putin attended that last G8 that took place in Northern Ireland in Loch Earn. Well, now, a decade on, Russia was kicked out of the G8 after invading Crimea in 2014, and now you see those pictures of the G7 and there, President Zelensky almost, it seems, standing in the place where President Putin used to stand.
Yeah, the G7, as we said, dominated by the appearance of President Zelensky there in Japan. But G7 leaders, James, also issued what could be construed as a thinly veiled threat to China, accusing it of using economic coercion to bully several countries. And those comments have seriously angered the Chinese.
Yeah, the word coercion was used by the G7. They also talked about being very worried about the situation in the East and South China Sea. And this, I think, has angered the Chinese. When you look at the statements that have come out of the foreign ministry spokesman, said the G7 was smearing China, said this was a small group seeking to impose its rules on the world. Well, the G7... is, in terms of seven countries, a pretty small block. But remember, it also has the EU as a member, and the EU is 28 countries. And so it does represent a reasonably large population. But China, angry and saying the policies of the G7 hinder international peace, damage regional stability and suppress development of other countries. In terms of the scale of diplomatic outrage and diplomatic language, this wasn't diplomatic. China's very angry.
Our diplomatic editor, James Bay, is reporting live there from Hiroshima. Many thanks, James. As you heard, Russia says its troops have taken full control of the eastern Ukrainian city of Bakhmut. That's after the head of Russia's Wagner mercenary group, Yevgeny Prigozhin, released a video claiming to have seized the area. Kyiv denies that the city has fallen, describing the situation there as critical. Bakhmut has been the focus of the longest and most deadly battle of Russia's war in Ukraine. Journalist Yulia Shapovalova has more now from Moscow.
In the afternoon of May the 20th, Prigozhin announced that Bakhmut had been taken under the complete control of the Wagner Group. And later in the evening, he posted a video of the installation of the Russian and Wagner flags in different parts of the city. However, it did not show the southwestern district where the Ukrainian military held their positions until recently. Prigozhin has been in a public conflict with the Ministry of Defense for several months now, and there were reports that the state media were forbidden to quote the businessman's statements that are not neutral and do not directly relate to the situation at the front. It's quite interesting that Russian TV channels in their news bulletins on the evening of May the 20th ignored the statement of the head of the Wagner Group about taking Bakhmut under full control. But now they can report about that as soon as we have the official statement from the Ministry of Defense.